normalizes warfare against people who do not look like the white, blue-eyed, blonde-haired European. The double standard has also been apparent in the compassionate support that some mainstream media outlets have extended to Ukrainians who took arms to fight against Russian troops. Sky News showed live on air how Ukrainians were manufacturing Molotov cocktails. The New York Post celebrated a Ukrainian soldier who blew himself up to prevent a Russian advance as heroic. Some Ukrainians have posted pictures online of themselves carrying weapons, like members of parliament Kyra Rudik. Their actions were widely praised. White victims are given moral and ideological support. Their militancy is glorified. Muslims and people of color who have organized in armed resistance are unlikely to be met with such praise. In fact, victims of US imperialism and violence are themselves blamed, and their words and actions are policed. Palestinians who choose to resist the brutal decades-long Israeli occupation of their land are regularly condemned as militants and terrorists in the mainstream Western media. In fact, Palestinians do not even have to resist, as they're often by default depicted as a threat to Western civilization. Genocidal violence against them is presented as Israeli defense. The Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, is not shown as patriotic heroes, but regularly demonized as an armed terrorist organization by the same media outlets that glorify white people taking up arms. The visible hypocrisy shows the staunch perseverance of white supremacism in mainstream Western media discourse. While the media creates powerful images and narratives, it also reflects societal dynamics. The double standard in reacting to war has been manifest in the continuous discrepancy between the rhetoric on freedom and democracy and a selective outrage. While the media creates powerful images and narratives, it also reflects societal dynamics. The double standard in reacting to war has been manifest in the continuous discrepancy between the rhetoric on freedom and democracy and the selective outrage. As Central and Eastern European governments have opened their borders for Ukrainian refugees, the racialization of people fleeing their homes continues. Poland allows white Ukrainians to cross the border, but there have been numerous reports of black people being denied entry to Poland, many of which remain stuck at the Ukrainian side of the border. This adds to the continuous mistreatment of refugees at the European Union and NATO's eastern frontier. The Bulgarian Prime Minister said that Ukrainian refugees were Europeans, educated and intelligent people, unlike previous refugees who might have been terrorists. The climate for the current discourse has been present for years. Long before Russia's intervention in Ukraine, anti-Russian fear-mongering has been part and parcel of Western narratives of the common enemy. The outspoken condemnation against Russia has swiftly entailed new sanctions and boycotts, with Russian media being banned and Russians being excluded from participating in sporting events. Meanwhile, calls for the boycott of the Israeli regime by Palestinians and human rights supporters around the world have vehemently been condemned by the European Union elites for years and oftentimes smeared as being anti-Semitic. The current dynamics reveal the unfortunate continuation of Orientalist and white supremacist structures.
This is for a better life.
For a better life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for tuning in and for following our episodes and for being with us. Inshallah, in this episode, I'm going to discuss with you some important verses about man's superiority and man's attributes. Those are attributes which are quite essential and quite critical for man to live a better life. And we are in this program for a better life. As you know, man is distinguished from other creatures, not only through the power of intellect, but he has also, as I said in one of the previous episodes, God has placed and has blown his spirit into him, so he is superior to other creatures. And more importantly, and also, of course, instead of saying more importantly, I would say that another important attribute of the human being is that man is completely free to choose his destiny, to shape his life and his fate. In other words, man is the master of his own fate. And this is how the Holy Quran presents the idea of man's destiny. You know, there is the light of guidance. And however, one is free to take it or not to take it, you know. The Quran presents this idea of one's destiny and fate. It says in verse 3 of chapter 76, surely we have shown him the way, he may be grateful or ungrateful. So this was the verse 3 of chapter 76 is a verse which shows that man is free. He can be grateful or ungrateful. He is not forced to be grateful, because if he is compelled in his being grateful, then there's no use, there's no benefit, and he is not to be blamed for his actions. He is not to be held responsible for his actions because he is compelled in whatever he does. Then divine reward and divine justice and also the resurrection entirely would be meaningless. They would be irrelevant. And so, dear brothers and sisters, to be thankful as human beings, because we are supposed to be thankful. Thankfulness is an important act of worship. We should always be thankful to Allah for giving us His blessings, for bestowing His rahmah and His compassion and mercy upon us, and for all the bounties that Allah has placed in front of us. To be thankful does not mean to just say shukran lillah, okay, or thanks be to Allah. We should thank God for having given us, for having actually shown us the right path, and for having given us innumerable blessings and bounties without expecting anything from us. Let's open our real eyes and see for ourselves His endless blessings around us, you know. Whatever we have within us and whatever we have without us, you know, around ourselves, are all manifestations of divine blessings. Dear brothers and sisters, being thankful to Allah is not based on just, you know, mere utterances or saying Subhanallah, Shukran Lillah, you know. We should try to use His blessings in such a way that we get closer to Him further by the light of His benevolence. We should use God's blessings in the right way, in the most appropriate way. And that's one way of being thankful to Allah, you know. Of course, God has given us the eyes, the different faculties, and we must use these faculties in the right way. And we should understand that these are the faculties that Allah has given to us. They are not ours. They are Allah's, you know, property in the first place. If we have a beating heart in our chest, that's Allah that, you know, helps the heart continuously beat and beat and keep the body alive, you know. So we must use every blessing that Allah has given us in the right way. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Both man and jinn have been bestowed the freedom to choose their way and their style of life. You know, as we know, no other creatures have such a choice except jinns. The jinn have the freedom to believe or disbelieve. You know, just as they disbelieved Allah, Iblis was, you know, one of those jinns that did not accept Allah's command, did not surrender himself to Allah's, you know, command. And he disobeyed Allah. And he chose to disobey Allah. You know, but you know, the level of perfection that jinns can reach is lower than that of man, than the level that man can reach. And of course, based on this principle, on this assumption, jinn must follow the prophets who have been sent to the human masses. They are also supposed to follow Allah. Every creature that has been created by Allah must follow God and must follow the teachings of the prophet. The jinns are also supposed to follow. And jinn, like all human beings, have all the biological functions. They reproduce like all living beings, according to some scholars. Their physical structure differs from, you know, man. They are not physical in their nature. Their bodies are light. They are not, you know, three-dimensional. Jinns can easily move about. They can walk through walls, you know, and they can penetrate everywhere. They are able to move from one part of the universe to other parts very easily, without any efforts. Jinns, you know, can take the forms of animals, humans, and anything, but, you know, their creation lacks that ultimate potentiality of perfection with which mankind has been endowed. So that's why we are saying, and based on the Quranic conception, a man, he has all the potentiality of perfection. He has the ability to change his life, to make his life better and better and better, and to get as close to Allah as the angels. And even when we compare human beings with the angels, the human beings are far better and far superior than the angels, because angels are compelled in their behavior. They are compelled in their behavior. So it is only humans who bear the divine trust and fulfill the goal of perfection. Only humans. Inna aradna al-amanata ala samawati wal-ard. You know, we offer the trust to the heavens and the earth and the mountains, but they refused to carry it and were afraid of it. And man carried it. So surely he is very unjust, very ignorant. وَحَمَلَهَا الْإِنسَانِ إِنَّهُ كَانَ ظَلُومًا جَهُولًا. So the responsibility was carried by men. No other creatures, the mountains, the animals, and whatever creatures that you can think of, could not take that responsibility to become God's vicegerent on earth. Only man, because of his ignorance, because he was unjust, because he was ignorant, accepted it. And he has the capacity to, of course, to become God's vicegerent on earth. So, brothers and sisters, we have run out of time. That's all for this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. my share. He knows. Allah knows.
In the limelight.
Roger Stone, a close Donald Trump ally, raged at the former U.S. president in the aftermath of the failed attempt to overturn the 2020 presidential election, telling a friend that Donald Trump was a disgrace who would go to prison and adding, he betrayed everybody. We have prepared for you an article written by Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, Roger Stone Raged at Disgrace Trump Over Failure to Overturn Election. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. According to a report from the Washington Post, close Donald Trump ally Roger Stone raged at the former U.S. president in the aftermath of the failed attempt to overturn the 2020 presidential election, telling a friend that Donald Trump was a disgrace who would go to prison and adding, he betrayed everybody. The Washington Post said it had viewed 20 hours of footage of the political operative that had been shot for a forthcoming documentary. It said, the footage showed Roger Stone meeting and corresponding with members of the far-right militia since indicted for seditious conspiracy over the Capitol riot on 6th of January 2021, discussing a plan in which Donald Trump would issue a blanket pardon to co-conspirators in the attempt to overturn the election, Senator Ted Cruz and Congressman Jim Jordan among them. Saying Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law and close advisor, should be punished in a way that would leave him brain dead. Suggesting violence against protesters for racial justice would be possible with the election out of the way. Roger Stone reportedly said, once there's no more election, there's no reason why we can't mix it up. These people are going to get what they're being asking for. The plan for a blanket pardon was reportedly blocked by Pat Cipollone, Donald Trump White House counsel. Trump had already commuted a 3-year sentence handed down to Roger Stone for obstructing Congress during the Russia investigation. The footage viewed by the Washington Post was shot by Danish filmmakers for a documentary, A Storm Foretold, to be released this year. Roger Stone, who has resisted cooperation with the House January 6 investigation, told the Washington Post, any claim, assertion or implication that I knew about, was involved in or condoned the illegal acts at the Capitol on 6 of January 2021 was categorically false. Roger Stone also said the paper employed a clever blend of guilt by association, insinuations, half-truths, anonymous claims, falsehoods and out-of-context trick questions, and said the footage could be deep fakes. Now 69 years old, Roger Stone, who was once a dirty trickster for Richard Nixon, has been close to Donald Trump since the 1980s. In 2020, he was closely involved with the Stop the Steal movement to overturn Joe Biden's victory, driven by the lie of widespread electoral fraud. On 5th of November, 2 days after the 2020 presidential election and 2 days before Biden's victory was called, the filmmakers captured Roger Stone talking to Michael Flynn, the former National Security Advisor Donald Trump pardoned for lying to the FBI during the Russia investigation. Stone was quoted as saying, our slogan should be count every legal ballot, adding, much better messaging, more positive. In the White House briefing room that evening, the Washington Post quoted Donald Trump as saying, "If you count the legal votes, I easily win." The Washington Post detailed Roger Stone's activities leading up to 6th of January, including staying at the Willard Hotel, a command center for Donald Trump associates. The paper said footage showed Roger Stone with members of the Oath Keepers militia, now charged with seditious conspiracy. The filmmakers also shot Roger Stone as he attempted to broker presidential pardons for money, as he attempted to secure access to Donald Trump's rally near the White House on 6th of January, but failed. The Washington Post said as the Capitol riot began on 6th of January 2021, Roger Stone was unavailable for a short period of time. He then told the filmmakers, "I think it's really bad for the movement. It hurts. It doesn't help. I'm not sure what they thought they were going to achieve." But he also said, "When you can't get a fair and honest judicial opinion, when you can't get a fair, honest and transparent election, when your legislative process is constipated by fear and threat." The Washington Post said Roger Stone then slightly misquoted former President John F. Kennedy. "Those who make peaceful progress impossible make violent revolution inevitable." Stone returned to Florida and worked on his pardon plan. The Washington Post said intended recipients included Senators Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, and Representatives Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz. Spokesperson for Ted Cruz and Jim Jordan denied contacts with Roger Stone. On 20th of January 2021, Inauguration Day, enraged by a pardon on fraud charges for Steve Bannon, a rival for Donald Trump's attentions, Roger Stone reportedly said Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law, was going to get a beating. "He needs to have a beating. He needs to be told, 'This time we're just beating you, next time we're killing you.'" According to the Washington Post, urged to say he was joking, Roger Stone said, "No, it is not a joke. I'm not joking. It's not a joke." Stone also said Jared Kushner should be punished in the most brutal possible way and would be brain dead when I get finished with him. Stone then turned to Donald Trump, who he said deserved to be impeached and whose presidency had been the greatest single mistake in American history. Referring to prosecutors in New York investigating Donald Trump's businesses, Roger Stone said, "A good long sentence in prison will give him a chance to think about it, because the Southern District is coming for him, and he did nothing." Stone also mocked Donald Trump's apparent plan to run again for president. Furthermore, recently, the U.S. National Archives has delivered White House visitor logs from Donald Trump's administration to the Congressional Committee investigating the 6th of January insurrection at the U.S. Capitol by extremist supporters of Donald Trump. The committee said on Friday, 4th of February, the National Archives also turned over records from former Vice President Mike Pence, meeting a 3rd of March deadline. A House of Representatives Select Committee aide said, "Yesterday, the Select Committee received additional production of records from the National Archives. This included records that the former president attempted to keep hidden behind claims of privilege." Donald Trump had tried to block the release of the visitor logs, but Joe Biden rejected his claim that they were subject to executive privilege in light of the urgency of the committee's work and Congress's compelling need. Several courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, have also ruled against the Republican former president's efforts to block the release of various records to the committee. So far, more than 725 people have been charged with playing a role in the attack on the Capitol by mobs of Trump supporters, which left 5 people dead and more than 100 police officers injured, as at Trump's urgings at a rally that morning, they tried to prevent the U.S. Congress certifying Joe Biden's win in the 2020 presidential election. Another 4 police officers involved in defending the Capitol later killed themselves. The bipartisan January 6th committee, chaired by Representative Benny Thompson of Mississippi, has been investigating the events surrounding the attack and the former president's role in that attack for more than 7 months, as well as charges of a political conspiracy by Donald Trump and key allies to get the results of the 2020 presidential election overturned. The committee has made more than 80 subpoenas public, including many issued to top Trump aides and allies, and interviewed more than 560 witnesses. It has also gathered records from social media and other telecommunication firms.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's topic, housing in Islamic culture. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's topic, we will talk about the topic of housing in the Islamic culture. What we can see in the Islamic teachings is that the Islam praises having a big house for those who need it, for example, those who have more children, whose family is big. On top of that, there are some people who require, lifestyle is in a way that they require a big house to live in a big house, so they can have it and it is praised. But on top of that, the structure of the houses should be in a way that it should show some kind of Islamic lifestyle. Generally, what we can see in today's world is people are living in the small compounds, people are living in the apartments, or maybe even they have houses. It is made on the basis or the structure which is being introduced by the West or maybe by a specific religion. Whereas when we talk about the Islamic housing and the structure of the house, when we say it should be Islamic, it means that it should have enough room for everyone. It should have enough room, enough place for the parents to live in a house. It should be having a specific place for praying. It should have a specific place for children to play and a specific place for everyone to get together in the family. And if they have some guests, so they should have a guest room as well. So when we talk Islamically, it looks at all aspects of the life within the house. And when it talks about the structure of the house, it says it should be vast in this way, that there everyone have a specific room or everyone has their own place. And for everything you have, space available in your house. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the housing in the Islamic culture, and obviously we said that the vast houses or big houses is praised, but according to the conditions that we have, so that it is not against the justice. On top of that, when we talk about the structure of the houses or the building itself, we said that it should have enough room for praying. It should have a specific room, specific place. Now, when we generally go and look at the, in the Islamic world, when we look at the old houses, I generally have experienced it, and I really liked it, that when it is said that there should be a room for prayer, they used to have a room. Even those who go for the pilgrimage, and they might have gone to the house of Imam Ali in the Kufa, and the other a'imma, like the other houses, they would have seen that there is a specific place for praying. And this place was specifically made in the houses, a kind of sanctuary within the house, or a kind of place which used to show the side of Qibla, that this is the way you need to face and pray. And there was a specific place or room, a small room, praying room in the houses previously, where people used to go and pray. And that's why when it was the time to, for example, like for someone to pass away, they used to say to take him to the place where he used to pray. So even in the rooms in the houses, there was a specific sign, a specific room, small room for praying. In the old Islamic culture, we can see whole houses. Maybe if you visit Iran or other Islamic countries, you might have seen this. And on top of that, the courtyard, especially big courtyards with the trees and all those things, which was a kind of peace. It was a kind of happiness. But we do not find the same peace and happiness in today's world when we are moved into the apartments, when we are moved into the small compounds, when we are moved into the place where we are living in sharing. And this way we are harming ourselves. The stress is increasing in our life. The sickness is increasing. We are not satisfied with what we have. We do not have peace. Therefore, it is necessary to live according to the teachings of Islam. Even when you're about to buy a house or rent a house, choose a house which is according to the teachings of Islam, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
According to a study published recently and approved by 195 countries, the worldwide impacts of the climate crisis are more severe than predicted, and there is only a narrow chance of securing a livable future for all. We now present you an article written by Damien Carrington. The piece is titled, IPCC Expert Warns UK Not Prepared for Climate Impacts. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. According to a lead author of a report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, the United Kingdom is very much not adapted to climate change and not prepared. The study, published recently and approved by 195 countries, says the worldwide impacts of the climate crisis are more severe than predicted, and there is only a narrow chance of securing a livable future for all. The report says in the United Kingdom, more flooding from rivers, at the coasts, and from intense downpours in urban areas is one of the biggest impacts of climate change. Sewage works, airports and seaports are among the key infrastructure at risk, along with the impacts of storms on the electricity and communication networks. While doubling in frequency within decades, the report says winters are getting wetter, summers are becoming drier, and water shortages are on track to increase in England and Wales. Heat waves are also a rising and deadly threat, with many homes and hospitals unprepared in the United Kingdom. According to studies cited in the report, one in three heat-related deaths in the UK between 1991 and 2018 were caused by global heating. The report says global climate impacts will also cause shortages of imported goods and increase their price in the United Kingdom, as well as damaging markets for British exports. The report even warns of financial instability due to economic shocks caused by climate change. Professor Richard Betts at the UK Meteorological Office and a lead author of both the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report and the CCRA said, "The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report backs up the conclusions of the UK Climate Change Risk Assessment, or CCRA, published in 2021. Professor Richard Betts added, "The key point is that the United Kingdom is very much not adapted to climate change and not prepared." Sir Patrick Vallance, the Chief Scientific Advisor to the UK government, responded to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report by warning of increasing extreme weather in the United Kingdom. Professor Patrick Vallance said, "This will strain housing, agriculture, transport and supply chains, little of which was built with such pressure in mind." He also warned of more wildfires endangering cities near moorland, such as in Manchester and Sheffield. Sir Patrick Vallance said, "The challenge is enormous, but it can be met." The IPCC report, which is based on 34,000 scientific studies, says that over the past three decades, Britain and Europe have experienced the highest number of river floods in the past 500 years. It says some coastal communities in Britain may have to move inland, and that the number of people at risk of annual coastal flooding in the United Kingdom would rise from 3.2 million to more than 5 million in a worst-case scenario. Mike Moorcroft at Natural England and one of the 234 lead authors of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report said, "As an island nation, what happens on the coast of Britain is a particular issue." But he said restoring nature on the coasts could provide better protection than hard defences such as the steered salt marshes in Somerset. Peter Alexander at the University of Edinburgh and another IPCC author said climate impacts on farming in Britain and around the world affected people. Peter Alexander said, "We are part of a global food system. We import close to half the food that we consume, and if the rest of the world's agriculture is being impacted by climate change, then we're going to effectively import those impacts to the United Kingdom, largely through potentially higher food prices." The Climate Change Committee, the CCC, the British government's official advisor, said in June of 2021 the government was failing to protect people from the fast-rising risk of the climate crisis, with action to improve resilience not keeping pace with the impacts of global heating. The Climate Change Committee experts said they were frustrated by the absolutely illogical lack of sufficient action on adaptation, given that taking action is up to 10 times more cost-effective than not doing so. The British government acknowledged in its legally required assessment of climate risk published in January, "We must go much further and faster to truly prepare for the impacts of a warmer world," adding, "In the majority of risk areas, we need to take more action." A British government spokesperson said the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report was stark, claiming, "We are working at pace on our National Adaptation Programme due in 2023, with robust measures including £5.2 billion to tackle flooding and coastal erosion in the United Kingdom." The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report strongly emphasises that the climate crisis hits the poor, vulnerable and excluded in society the most, and that addressing inequality is an essential part of tackling global heating. Professor Lindsay Stringer at the University of York and an Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change author said different segments of the population can be more or less vulnerable, and that applies not just in developing countries, but within the United Kingdom as well. The chair of the Climate Change Committee's Adaptation Committee, Julia King, writing with the former chair, John Krebs, said, "Adaptation should be integral to levelling up in the United Kingdom. Poorer households are more severely affected by the health and financial consequences of flooding and other extreme weather events." They said, "Britain has the capacity and the resources to adapt, but the government is simply not doing enough." They added, "Lack of action now is storing up problems and costs for future generations. They will have to pay for our negligence."
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on February 17, 2022 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with the participation of people from Tabriz and East Azerbaijan, commemorating the anniversary of the Tabriz uprising of February 18, 1978.
In mid-1358, which equals to 1979, Tabriz faced a revolutionary attack. In Tabriz itself, there were a small number of vicious elements, but most of them poured to Tabriz from outside that city. They were also helped in some way from the center. Those disruptors were helped by some people. As a result, some individuals were worried. We were raising this issue at that time in the Revolutionary Council. Some individuals were really concerned. However, Imam said that the zealous people of Tabriz themselves would solve the problem and that no one needed to interfere. This was Imam's logic. In his speech, Imam also stated this. He said that Tabriz does not need the intervention of others, as Tabriz itself will calm the troubled waters. And that is exactly what it did. Shahid Madani, who was the Friday prayer leader of Tabriz at that time, replacing Shahid Ghazi, may God bestow paradise on him, was in the middle of the arena that day. Shahid Madani himself was in the middle of the ground, and the youth of Tabriz increasingly gathered behind him. Thousands of young people accompanied him and were able to overcome this conspiracy. Imam's move, outlook, and behavior brought about such a great success. That was a step. Such was the nature of Imam's work.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
One important example of Imam's acumen in helping the continuity of the revolution and the revolutionary move was the measures that he adopted during the sacred defense era. From the first day when Saddam's attack on some airports and areas began until the last day of the 8-year war and the adoption of the resolution, Imam would constantly encourage and breathe new life into the soldiers, the people, the supporters, and the officials of the country. In fact, Imam turned the war that was imposed on the Iranian nation into a tool to show the power of the nation. Well, we were really empty-handed inside the country. We were empty of weapons, of facilities, and of a regular and of a regular organization in the face of the enemy.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the World with Reporters.
A huge number of Ukrainian refugees continue to arrive at EU borders in Poland, Slovakia, Romania and Hungary. On Thursday, EU Home Affairs ministers adopted the Temporary Protection Directive. It means the refugees can work and go to school in any of the bloc's 27 member states for at least 1 year.
If you compare to the refugees that came in 2015, how long time it took to have the proper decisions. For example, just to have their asylum applications processed, it could take years.
So, by the EU's own admission, refugees travelling here from conflict zones involving Western military powers did not and do not receive the same protection. Meanwhile, advocates are calling on the EU to pay particular attention to certain groups.
In general, people who are displaced in a forced way are vulnerable. But we want to call attention to specifically the situation of women and girls because they are disproportionately affected.
European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen travelled to Slovakia and Romania on Thursday to assess the refugee crises facing the two EU nations. She took the opportunity to try and apply additional pressure on Moscow.
The three waves of sanctions we introduced are already having an impact on the Russian economy and therefore Putin's war effort. And we will take additional steps if the situation deteriorates on the ground.
Non-EU country Moldova has taken in more than 100,000 Ukrainian refugees so far. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell visited the country on Thursday to offer support. However, there is concern over the treatment of some who are trying to reach the EU from Ukraine. Senior UN officials are criticising evidence of discrimination by EU border authorities against African and Asian nationals attempting to flee the conflict. Rights groups are also condemning the racism and are asking EU leaders to remember the bloc's values they talk so much about. Jerome Hughes, Press TV, Brussels.
Al-Fajr cultural days have kicked off, but this time it is not held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Rather, Beirut is hosting the event like many other Iranian art exhibitions held here.
Activities include many art activities, theater, music, exhibition, seminars and other activities.
The Iranian Minister of Culture opened the festivals with an awe-inspiring musical concert. Iranian musicians there glad to be attending such an event.
I'm a musician from Iran. I play oud, a common instrument in Muslim world. I really like the Arabic culture, Arabic countries' cultures. By myself, and I think the collaboration between Muslim countries, it would be good. Something like Fajr days in Lebanon, and I really enjoy my stay in Lebanon.
The many facets of Iran's artistic culture have come all the way to Lebanon, from the folklore dress to post-Islamic calligraphy.
This exhibition is for Iranian exhibition for the Iranian handicraft for before Islam and after Islam.
According to organizers, this event is significant in that it represents part of collaboration between Iran and Lebanon. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The World Bank has recently approved a plan to use more than $1 billion from a frozen Afghan trust fund for aid in Afghanistan through UN agencies and charities. Afghan experts welcoming the move suggest that there should be a clear mechanism for disbursing the money so that Afghanistan gains the greatest benefits.
Allocating $1 billion as aid is a piece of good news for Afghanistan, but there should be a clear and appropriate mechanism so that the money is not wasted like hundreds of billions of dollars that were poured into Afghanistan in the past 20 years. I think, first of all, the UN should come to an understanding with the Taliban. Then they can assess needs or create jobs through developmental and fundamental projects.
This comes as unemployment, poverty and hunger crises are deepening in Afghan society. Afghans expect the Taliban and international community to create job opportunities. calling for unfreeze of Afghanistan's frozen funds and more aid to the country.
We have been experiencing a very harsh winter. Many died of hunger and illnesses. We neither have a job nor received humanitarian aid.
Following the Taliban takeover, the U.S. froze some $9 billion in Afghan central bank assets and large global funds to the country were halted. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Turkey has closed the passage of warships through its Straits of Bosphorus and Dardanelles. The decision was taken after Ankara called Russia's military action in Ukraine a war. President Erdogan said Turkey is using the authority given to it by the 1963 Montreux Convention Pact on passage of its Straits to prevent the escalation of the Russia and Ukraine conflict.
Turkey is determined to use the authority given by the Montreux Convention on Turkish Straits in a manner to prevent escalation of the Russia-Ukraine crisis.
Erdogan said he was very saddened by Moscow's attack on its neighbor, describing the move as unacceptable, adding that Turkey will not abandon its ties with both Ukraine and Russia. The Turkish defense minister, in his turn, asked all sides to respect the international pact Turkey has worked by, assuring that it is Ankara's right to limit passage in the straits in wartime. Kiev had already asked Turkey to close its straits to the Russian warships. The move will prevent more Russian ships from reaching the Black Sea, from where it had launched attacks on Ukrainian southern coast. Analysts say Turkey's decision does not only help Ukraine but also Russia, as the decision prevents all warships, not only Russian ones, from crossing the straits.
Turkey is following a balanced policy between the two countries. The president already clearly stated that Ankara will not take side and stand with neither Russia nor Ukraine. However, enforcing the Montreux Convention is an international procedure, which will not affect Russia negatively, and Ukraine had already asked for it, hence Turkey will not be put in a position to choose sides. However, Turkey already rejects the Russian military action.
Turkey maintains good ties with both Russia and Ukraine, as it bought S-400 missiles from the first and sold the drones to the second, and does not seem willing to risk taking sides in this conflict. It seems that Turkey is trying to remain impartial in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, while it's trying to mediate to end the fight, with President Erdogan making some calls and pushing for a political solution. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
The Home Office has verified that the majority of people trying to reach the UK's shores via the English Channel are fleeing war and persecution. This comes in response to allegations made by the Home Secretary that the majority are illegitimate, in her own words, asylum shoppers.
If the laws that they're trying to put through Parliament at the present time, if they had been in process at the time that the present Home Secretary, Priti Patel, the time her family came as refugees and asylum seekers from Uganda, they would not have been allowed to come into the United Kingdom. Or if they did come into the United Kingdom, they would be put into some sort of detention camps that she is advocating.
The issue of Ukrainian refugees also got off to a rocky start, with the Home Secretary suggesting they could benefit from fruit picker visas. Now, under pressure, the government is offering emergency visas for those with family members already living in Britain. But at the same time, the government is pushing through legislation that will criminalise those coming from the Middle East and Africa, specifically via the English Channel, and people protesting this are getting mixed responses.
It's interesting that while we've been reporting here today, we have heard people pass by making some pretty off-colour remarks about refugees arriving here in this country. And that just confirms that there is a lack of sympathy here. And some would say those sentiments stem from misinformation, but most importantly, from racism.
White-skinned, blue-eyed. They've said it on the media. White-skinned, blue-eyed means you're acceptable. If you're brown-skinned or black-skinned, you're not acceptable. And it's a form of apartheid.
There are people who have been driven to suicide after arriving in Britain. There were actually more people dying after being in the hands of the Home Office here than the numbers that had been dying crossing the Channel. And that is crazy to think that the hope and the aspiration that drives a person to risk their life, the kind of Britain that they're hoping for, is the one we want to live in. But it's not the one we have. It's what we have is deeply driven, divided by racism.
The borders and nationality.